Hello, good afternoon. It's Monday the 6th of June and you are tuning in to RC Expert episode 4. Today I have David Stubbs, Manager Director and owner of SSGC Limited in Swindon. David, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm fine, thank you.
Looking well. Love the fish tank.
Yes. Keep trying to give everyone a different view.
Is it piranhas in there or is it tropical?
Not yet.
David, thank you very much for joining me today. We're going to talk about supply chains using subcontractors, labour providers within the private security industry. It's a big topic at the moment. It has been for many, many years. And in terms of lockdown and COVID, with all the accelerated work that's taking place and the amount of subcontracting and companies using various different organisations, I think it's quite a good topic to talk about today.
Yep, I agree.
So, David, for the viewers, can you just sort of run through your background and how you got into the private security sector?
Yes, of course. Well, I'm an ex-military policeman, having joined the army at 16 and doing a year's worth of boy service. Went to the military police and served there until about 1993. When I came out, I was a private detective for a little while, working on insurance fraud, and then moved into retail security as a security manager for Alders Department Store. From there, I started my own business in 2000, specialising in retail security and really building myself up to the position where I'm sat as the MD of SSGC today.
Brilliant. Are you quite busy at the moment?
Yeah, we've got quite a lot on. So we've just mobilised about 28 of the COVID-19 testing centres, about 1,200 staff being placed over the last 8 weeks.
Fantastic. That's good news, keeping people in employment in these difficult times. I know obviously it's a topic very close to your heart, and that's the use of labour providers and subcontractors. I know you've had extensive experience and you, with your background in sort of investigations and sort of auditing side of life. Can you sort of explain how you've sort of come across the industry that we're currently in and also the pitfalls in using labour provider only and subcontractors?
Yeah, I mean, labour-only agreements were a bit of a surprise to me a couple of years ago. So I tripped across it as I was doing our typical ACS audit, asking companies whether they subcontracted any labour that came to us so that we could be clear on that, on what that supply chain looked like for our customers and to pass the audit as everyone does. And of course, the stock reply that came through to all of our stock subcontractors were that they didn't subcontract any works. At one point, I found an email trail that suggested that another company was being used with one of our subcontractors, and that alerted me to the fact that all wasn't well and they weren't ACS in there. And we took that company to account, or held them to account, and they maintained the line that they weren't subcontracting. And of course, they were then, as it transpires, using a labour-only agreement, meaning that they were outside of all the audit requirements for the ACS, and they could answer us quite correctly and say that they were not subcontracting, because they felt that the ACS exclusion meant that they didn't have to tell us.
So in terms of sort of, there's some definitions out there from HMRC and obviously from the ACS. You've got labour-only and you've got subcontracting. So where is the two different, David? So we've got subcontracting agreement, okay, and you've got labor only. You know, subcontractors work under their own supervision. So if a security officer is put on site, they're working under their own supervision, which I think is very borderline incorrect, being a subcontractor, because you are taking directions from the security company that's actually deployed you there. So where is, in terms of sort of legalities and where we sit, where is the difference between labour only and subcontracting?
So I've spent a fair bit of time on this, and an awful lot of this depends on who you ask. So there are differing views. What is absolutely clear is if you are contracting out your labour element of your work, it is still a subcontract agreement. Yeah. So So that's first. It's just you are subcontracting part of that. The ACS have tackled this, the approved contractor scheme has tackled this head on. So they've done a definition of what is labour only, and you can read that through on their website, but effectively it is you take the labour on from another company without the management, without the systems, and then you use that as a labour resource to deploy yourself. But this is a security industry only definition and doesn't have a place in the wider in wider commerce. So it puts us in a pretty difficult position, to be fair, on whether our contract, being a security contract, excluding subcontracting, includes labour only or not, which is where we spent a good 12, 18 months trying to clear up. So the difference from a security company's point of view is that you can take labour from a non-approved company, if it's a labour-only agreement, and you can deploy that as long as you manage that service yourself. If it's a subcontract that you use, then it has to be an approved company that you're using. So there's clear benefits in there for using a labour-only provider. The first is there's lots of companies out there that are staffed for work that are not ACS, and they tend to be an awful lot cheaper, upfront cheaper. The problem with that is that quick supply of labour actually is only possible if you breach the ACS regulations. So as soon as you start to look at BS 7858, now under a labour-only agreement, you, the contractor, would need to do BS 7858 and all those staff coming in. So, or at least make sure that you've seen and inspected the file. And as this is predominantly labour that is being used for quick turnover of work, 24 hours notice, we know what it's like. Client rings up, I need 12 guards in Bristol tomorrow, please. Where do those people come from? Okay, they go through that supply chain, because we all go, well, we haven't got it, but we can go to our supply chain, they're bound to have it. Well, the whole point of being able to come up with that amount of people very quickly should alert us to the fact that things aren't right. So if we're operating a labour-only agreement correctly, we should be going to another company and saying, right, have you got the staff? Yes. Then we need to go through our vetting. So then all of a sudden, those 12 people are not available tomorrow at all, because you can't possibly get that vetting in. So if you look at the speed of the delivery, it actually, there is no advantage at all. So you've got to do all of that work yourself. Otherwise, you haven't really kept to the terms, the ACS terms, under a labour-only agreement.
So what you've uncovered here, David, really is a loophole in the ACS system that they've not really, you know, looked into correctly, and there's a circumvent of the system.
Yeah, if we just take the vetting only as a piece, I spent years on this, so it can all get complicated. But if we simplify it down just to the vetting piece, not only can you avoid the vetting coming in, but if you tell the ACS auditor that these people were brought in under a labour-only agreement, they won't even inspect their files. So it's a complete avoiding all the standards that you need to do. So nobody's checking that the vetting has been done on those 12 individuals that we just deployed through to Bristol. And that's for you direct. The problem is with these supply chains is they're massively opaque, and often 6-7 companies deep. And if they're using labour-only providers in that chain, no one has to declare it under the ACS rules. So you have to declare your subcontractors. But if you're using a labour-only provider, you don't need to declare who they are at all. So all of a sudden, these opaque supply chains appear. They appear very cheap, and they can put manpower on the ground very quickly. So you can see how it's kind of intoxicating, isn't it? Get in there. You can see why people use them.
During lockdown, if I go back to the Olympics 2012, where there was a huge acceleration of security providers being established and formed, social media has moved on a lot since 2012. And since we've gone into lockdown from March, there has been a huge increase on Facebook, on pop-up security companies offering staff. Some of them, you know, are not even registered at company's house. We probably, like yourself, as a business owner, we probably get between 10 and 15 new companies contacting us weekly, asking us that, you know, they can supply us labor. And then we go through a very intense due diligence process of documentation, supplying PAYE, payments, national insurance payments, tax. They fall down the wayside very, very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots and lots and lots of choice out there, isn't there? If you're looking for really quick labor and you're willing to turn a blind eye, or maybe not have the knowledge of what is going on and just go, okay, that's it. I can get my people. I can serve my customers. You can move on pretty quickly down that line. The trouble is you don't know who you're deploying. And the fact that somebody's got a license, well, if they've not been checked properly, there's lots and lots of cases of fraudulent licensing going on, lots of people swapping licenses, not being identified properly. So, and taxations have been avoided down the line there as well. So you've got no help with PAYE records, etc., being kept. So it's really easy for rogue labor. That's my term for labor rogues. Really easy for the rogue element of these businesses to provide people, to provide the cover that they need, and to escape scrutiny. So that's what is going on.
So this scenario for the listeners, David. So I'm Mr. Customer, and I'm looking for security staff on a temporary contract. We'll use you as Company A. Okay.
Yeah.
I contact you as Company A, and I say, Mr. Company A, I need 100 staff to look after X, Y, and Z premises. You submit your pricing, great. You then go out to supply chain, you go out to subcontractors, fulfill my requirements, then there's an incident. Where does liability lie with? For example, if it's a wrongful arrest, if something gets stolen on site, where does the liability in this supply chain start and stop?
Yeah, I think actually it's probably easier if there's an incident. If there's not an incident and a tax investigation, we'll get onto that one next. But let's say there's an incident there where an officer has, I don't know, made a false arrest, right? Something like, or caused an injury to someone else. So if that person turns out to be self-employed within an opaque labor-only supply chain, then there's no insurance in place for that individual. And the other scary thing about that is you might not actually have insurance for that individual within your piece as well. So if there's no insurance at the bottom end of the supply chain, the claim goes to the next participant above there. And ultimately you take responsibility as a professional organization for the people that you deploy to your customers. So the one thing is for sure is your customer is going to hold you to account. So you've got a customer holding you to account, and you may not have any insurance in place because the person who's created that event turns out to be a self-employed person at best through a labor-only agreement. At worst, it's not even them. It's somebody, some individual that you now can't identify. So you've got to stand there as a professional business owner delivering a professional business case across to your customer for money, and you can't even identify the people who are carried out the work. So it's massively embarrassing and costly. I think more to the point, and probably more at risk every day, is the fact that if the taxation's not being accounted for correctly, then you've got a wider obligation through the HMRC to carry out that due diligence. And if you haven't carried out the due diligence, which includes quarterly reporting, you can be held liable for all the taxation problems in that supply chain as well. So if you think that could be VAT, that could be national insurance, that could be minimum wage offences. So there's a whole host of offences, all that count have penalties. You could effectively end up paying for your service to your labour-only provider, and then 5 years after that service is completed, an Inland Revenue investigation comes in because that company that you used has gone pop somewhere down the line, and they found a whole load of officers that haven't paid tax correctly or been self-employed and but not reported. So the HMRC will simply follow up that supply chain to see where they can get their money from. And it doesn't necessarily stop at you. So if you get that huge liability, let's face it, if it's 6 or 7 years worth of supply, where you've had 10% of your service done by a supply chain, all in labour only agreements, that could easily run to millions of pounds. And if that sends you under, your end client, which is likely to be a big blue chip brand, is the person that can also face the wrath of the HMRC.
Yeah, because they've engaged that company, so it will have to stop somewhere. So HMRC will go to the client and say, okay, what due diligence checks did you perform on this company? Well, they were cheap. They were cheap at the time. We needed this covered.
Yeah. It's just not going to work. There are specific things that you need to do if you're involved in a labour-only chain. There are guidelines on the HMRC website. It is basically, if you go onto the Dovegot website and put in use of labour providers, advice on due diligence, it comes up with a huge check sheet of stuff that you need to do, which includes quarterly reporting with names and the amount of money that people have earned that could be self-employed within there, or the PAYE records of those individuals. Now, nobody's doing that.
No.
That's simple. Because if you had to have that burden of extra reporting and you had to do the vetting that you really should be doing, then all of a sudden your labour-only agreement is no use to you.
Do you think as a security business owner, David, we're becoming tax investigators for HMRC? Are we doing their own job? Because, you know, we talk about due diligence and background. If HMRC are issuing out company PAYE numbers and company VAT numbers, surely the responsibility should start there with HMRC. So if you've got a rogue provider, let's say, for £12, you know, I can set up a company on Companies House for a formation agency, get myself a very cheap website within 14 days, have a PAYE, have a VAT number, I'm trading. Now, does a due diligence, should it start and stop there by HMRC giving out the VAT number and the PAYE number?
So I'm conflicted on this, because the first part of me says, well, surely this is HMRC's problem. They've got to get a grip of this. And actually, I'm penalised because they're not doing their job properly, right? And I understand that point of view. But here we sit in an industry where we're all struggling to be seen as professionals. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. We're all saying, you know, we should be identified as key workers. We should be this, that, and the next thing. You want to go and search professionals within the security industry, everybody's bleating that they should be a seasoned professionals. And we want to be seen for the identity that we are. And we don't want our staff paid minimum wage. So we have to take individual responsibility for this, I think. As professionals, should we be turning the blind eye? Because we all know what's going on, right? If we're getting 12 people in Bristol tomorrow for a tenner an hour, it's probably not all right.
Yeah.
And it should alert us to the fact that that's not being done properly. So instead of profiteering at that stage, or even just getting yourself out of the carsy with your customer, because you can come up with the correct amount of people, we should be alerting ourselves to say, hold on, something's just not quite right here. We should not be able to put that amount of people on the ground and make our taxation requirements for a tenner an hour. That's probably not right. And therein lies my problem with saying it's the HMRC's fault. It's not really, is it? We're all to blame. We've all sat here for years and years and years and just let this gravy machine run round and then complain to anyone that listen that we're not seen as professionals.
The problem I see, David, is I agree. Everything you're saying, I've been through it. Okay, I've been through it like you. I've come across so many rogue providers. They want your business. They want to work in partnership with you. And then when you get down to the nuts and bolts and nitty gritty, it's not right. You know, we get emails, you know, we can provide you security for £10 an hour. Really? Okay. So how are you doing there? And I think we've seen it recently with a very large uplift within the retail food sector with one particular client, and one major security company had the contract. It was then subcontracted out to about 50 other security providers
across
the UK. And the rates that were getting offered, even at minimum wage, something wasn't right. You just can't work out the maths and mechanics and how is the national insurance, the tax, the pension, you know, yet the NI being paid on these rates. And these guys and girls who are working frontline on minimum wage, there's going to be a disconnect somewhere because the rates that were being offered out were being filtered down. You can't make a profit, let alone operate your business based on them numbers. And I think the problem we're seeing now is the likes of, if you and I said, no, thank you very much, we're in this to make money, we're in this business, okay, we're here to deliver a service. But if you and I are going to turn and say, no, there's going to be another 30, 40 people behind me and you going to go, yeah, I'll do it. And this is where the problem is, because you've identified something, and I know you spent a lot of money and a lot of time and gone through a lot of heartache and pain to bring this out, which we'll talk about further in a moment. I've been through the same with companies, okay? And you look at it and you're thinking, well, this is not what you promised us, number one. You then go on a job. We do obviously quite large sporting events. And you've got staff there that don't even work for the same company you've engaged and are self-employed. You know, it's crazy. And it really is. It's getting worse. You know, I don't think it's getting any better. It's getting a lot worse. And I think there has to be a tighten up somewhere, and there's got to be a tighten up on the ACS workbook. And I truly believe, David, that the business licensing needs to come into the security industry sooner rather than later, where there is strict due diligence processes before any company can be approved to work in the private security sector.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Business licensing looks like a step forward, as long as it's done with teeth. The problem is the approved contractor scheme looked like it was a way forward. And I think for a period of time, I think there were some real benefits that got watered down. That's the problem. And unfortunately, I know the cases that you're on about. I know exactly the companies that you're on about, and it's not the forum for it. And I know that as well. But we're talking about the leaders, the leading organizations in our industry are turning a blind eye to this. It's not right. And until we can turn those heads and turn the customers and alert all the customers to the problems that they're encouraging, then I think we're kind of stuck. We said no, so we took a decision 2 years ago to go, right, this is not for us. We've taken four or five legal cases on, we've put a rogue labor page on our website, we've started to engage with press, industry press, on what rogue labor is. I noticed encouragingly the NSI have actually done a white paper on rogue labor. So I think we are gathering traction, but there's a lot at stake for some very big companies who have done some really cheap labor deals, and they're stuck. So I think we've got to all keep shouting things like this. I will definitely do more. I'm going to bang the drum for ever and a day. We definitely need more money in the industry at the hourly rate end to be able to do this job properly.
I agree with you. 100%.
And the more people that say that to clients and step aside and say, well, no, that's not for us, I think the more chance we have of gaining traction on this. The big companies who are standing out. The thing is, for the first time, I think, because there was so much labour required, we got a real insight to the trading of these different companies. All of a sudden, these opaque supply chains became transparent because it was on Facebook. And I, for one, spent almost, I don't know, my evenings for a whole week just taking photographs and locking it up and thinking, right, this needs dealing with later. You know.
So part of your investigations of some of the cases that you've taken to court, it's not you've been taken to court, you've actually, you know, you've gone transparent. So you found minimal wage offences,
yep.
Incorrect classifications and non-PAYE in tax,
yep.
Wages were not paid, and BS 7858 breaches throughout. So you've got a case file, okay? We're not going to name companies, but you've got a case file on dossiers on various different breaches. So obviously when you went up the food chain, David, to the SIA and HMRC, was you taken seriously enough, or was it just brushed under the carpet? Or
no, I mean, I've had so much difficulty. I've had supportive language, but very little in the way of effective action. So I've had encouraging pats on the shoulder, you know, but it shouldn't be for us as a small private company trying to make it in the corporate world, you know. This, it's just lame, frankly. So
is it David and Goliath?
It is, but we're going to carry on chipping away. We're definitely not giving up on this. This is for me career defining stuff. So I am, even if it's on my own, going to get things altered. We are persistent, and we are carrying on taking people to court, making claims. We've strengthened all of our contracts. Our early stuff was very weak. Lately, we've been really, really successful in holding people to account. We've got an audit facility now that we understand. We found dual payrolls. We found fake IDs. We're tripping across criminal offences now that we're able to establish. So I think, again, we're sharpening our tools. So we are getting there. I had one. I'm going to tread carefully.
the lawyers are on standby, don't worry.
I have one case that's current, where a ACS company is saying that they can supply us subcontractor or labor only or their own supply whenever they want, and they can change between those rules whenever they want, and there's nothing anyone can do about it.
Wow.
So I sent that statement to an investigator of the SIA and asked for their comments, and I have yet to receive one. So can an ACS company act as a labor-only provider or a subcontractor at their behest? At the moment, the ACS or the SIA don't want to come down on either side of that fence. So that it's amazing, because I thought, right, this is a question that will get some movement, because if we can do that, then we can say to some retailer today, we're an SIAE accredited company, and then without telling them, we can just be their labour provider.
Yeah,
and so all of a sudden we can get ourselves in a right mess. So I plan to let the SIA know that we're going to go public with this if they don't assist. So hopefully we can get an answer out of that. But if not, then there will be social media messages with the direct quotes out there for everybody to see. This is the sort of information that needs to be in front of those big retailers, those blue chip organizations who are all investing in security today. And of course, if they're asking and they've got these procurement departments hammering down the price, they are part of the cause. And yeah, they need to understand that this isn't without this isn't without penalty. They're not getting a decent service. A service at £10 an hour is not the same as a service at £15 an hour.
Yeah, we're not selling cans of beans or loaves of bread. You know, there's a markup on top of paying somebody that, you know, has got a family or has got bills, they've got a mortgage, they are frontline within your premise, you know, they are customer facing, they are dealing with absolutely everything that's taking place. I commend you for what you've done, and it is a mountain to climb. You know, I can imagine what you're going through. I've done exactly the same a few years back with another organization, and it is a David and Goliath, and you've got to keep going. And sooner or later, what I'm hoping, you know, is people will take notice of this and go, do you know what, Dave's got a point here. If we're not going to change this now between us as business owners of the security industry, this is going to continue going on and on and on within the next 5 to 10 years and not get any better. Everyone's moaning about the security industry, that the rates of pay are rubbish, the conditions are rubbish and everything else, but it's a buyer's market. And until we turn around and say to the buyers, that is what we want to pay our staff, London living wage at a bare minimum, they're getting taxed, national insurance, you've got insurance to pay on top of that, you've got operating costs, plus we've got to turn a profit, plus you've got to have management support on top to run your contracts. This is what you need to be paying. You know, and then perhaps then the industry will change. People that want to stay in the industry will look at more of a career path instead of just rushing in, trying to grab some quick cash and get back out again. But it's going to take something to nucleus it and to change it very, very quickly.
I think our problem is even worse than what you suggest. This isn't actually about getting our officers to 10, 11, 12 pound an hour. This is about getting our officers minimum wage with correct PAYE and employment rights. That we're way off where people think we are. Well, actually, if you take time to think about it, every professional in the industry will sit there and go, do you know what, there's no way that contractor are paying PAYE and taxation for all of those people at that rate, and everyone's got it within their supply chain, so we all know it. People have just got to stand up and be counted. It would be great to get to a position where we've got London living wage. That would be fantastic. But I'll accept for now that we can give every single security officer at least minimum wage with all of their employment benefits in line. I mean, it's not our sector, but you know, we're trying to edge our way up away from all the minimum wage stuff. We've got less than 5% of our staff now on minimum wage. But there is, if it's legal, I think there's room for it. The problem is we're way off that. I'd hate to think about how many people work in our industry and they can't pay their own taxes.
I think the SIA are getting a lot better. There's a recent, in fact, it was actually today, the SIE have announced that they prosecuted a director, I think up in Liverpool, running a security company, declaring on company accounts X amount of turnover, reduced PAY, reduced VAT. And I do believe that they've received quite a heavy sentence. Do you think the sentencing needs to be more harsh to stop people going down this road and thinking, okay, it's, you know, cash in hand, don't pay nothing? Do you think it's taken too long before the SIA have jumped in to start issuing bigger sentences?
I haven't seen that case, so I will definitely go and grab the details. That sounds really interesting. Yeah, I mean, tougher sentencing is great, but just a willingness to investigate and exclude them from our industry would be enough, frankly. And again, it's that piece where we aim for a lofty goal, but the bar's down here today. You know, we can just step up a little bit. It doesn't have to be anything too dramatic. We're asking to make sure everybody pays their officer enough to get their PAYE or their employment benefits and not sit within that almost modern slavery category where you've got all of these people, all of these masses sitting. And then for the firms, yeah, I mean, get them out of the ACS, you know, get them gone. Let's exclude them. If we can get prosecutions, that's great, but we don't even need that, do we? We can just get them excluded. I handed a separate company who we knew had supplied over 150 officers over a 3-year period to us. We, again, through the court system, we got what's called a Part 18 request. That's where we can enforce some material coming across. So we got their ACS audit information across as part of a Part 18, and it showed throughout the period that they had no more than 12 staff on their books.
Wow.
We handed it across to the ACS. They're still here. You know, that's it. Crazy.
Yeah. We can talk about this for hours and days.
We can.
but, you know, I think it's great what you're doing. I really wish you to continue this. And I know you know, you're very approachable. So if there is companies out there, you know, like I say, David, at the beginning, I own my own business. You own your own business. You're on here. You know, I'm asking you as an expert. You've been through this. I've been through it myself. There's probably other security companies out there have been through exactly the same as what we have. It's probably good for them to have a chat with you. It's probably good for them to sort of see what processes you put in place in terms of due diligence. You know, it's also very beneficial to look at the HMRC guidelines in terms of the labor providers and the due diligence checks, because if someone does slip through your net and you can then produce before all reasonable ground that you have checked and complied, cross-checked and checked companies' house records, PAYE payments, tax, VAT, insurances, you've been to their offices, you've seen samples of their BS7858, and if something slips through, you can't be held responsible for that. You've gone above all reasonable grounds to exclude yourself, that you have actually engaged with this subcontractor or this labor provider but carried out your due diligence checks correctly. If you haven't, then quite simply, you're going to be paying for it long term.
Yeah, it's some simple steps. Get your contracted sorted. Make sure you talk about labor-only agreements and exclude them from your contract. So that's the first piece that you can that you can do. Get a right of audit that is GDPR compliant. People hide behind GDPR, but it's there to protect data. You can still go and check who is working on your sites and that they've been vetted correctly. And get that right of audit and work out the GDPR requirements within that piece between you and your supplier. There are two critical steps, I think, to getting this sorted out. If you've got a decent contract and you've got a right of audit and you carry out that right of audit periodically, you are safe.
And if nobody's got nothing to hide, David, they will provide you that information.
Why not? Yeah.
It's as simple as that. If, you know, we do it. We ask our subcontractors quarterly, okay, suppliers X, Y, and Z. It's there. The ones that don't supply it or miss our deadlines, they're terminated. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the only difference between your action and ours is we've been actively then pursuing them.
Yeah.
So that we can get this Part 18 information out and within the court process. That knowledge has proved invaluable. It's expensive.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Not faint-hearted, but it is the only way.
Well, David, thank you very much today. I really appreciate it. I hope people get some insight and actually stop and think and even look at their current processes and procedures. And if we can eradicate the rogue element within the security industry, I believe will be another step forward. So once again, thank you very much.
No problem. If anybody viewing this wants to go on our website, there's a section there for rogue labor. Click the links and you'll see all the details there. Tap me up on LinkedIn if you want some help with it. It doesn't matter if you're a client or a competitor, I'll help for this. No problem at all.
What I'll do, David, on the podcast and the links, I'll stick your LinkedIn details and I'll put your company website there in relation to Rogue Traders so that people can actually go on that and pull the information. And like you say, you're open for any discussions and chats, and that's great.
Perfect, Paul. Thank you.
David, thank you very much. And I'll see you soon.
Great stuff.
Thanks a lot. Yeah. Bye.